I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
Three employees and two work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Welcome back, everyone, to tonight's video. The story I have for you tonight is about this janitor cleaner in this mental facility, asylum, if you will, and what he encounters and the things that go on within these walls will terrify you. Stay tuned. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. No demonic tale of the shelf of a library can match the horrors of mental health. No ghost story from a friend of a friend can recreate the terror your own mind resending you causes. I worked between those walls for 2 years. If I had done so for 20 more, I still wouldn't have gotten used to it. Mental health hospitals aren't a place to go when you need to get better. Just a place you need to go when you can't get any worse. A building of people who can't get any worse. Being the cleaner meant I didn't have to deal with the patients much. I'd greet them whistling past in the corridors and even make pleasant, ordinary small talk with some of the more social ones. They were the ones who surprised you when you were mopping up their blood the following morning after they made an attempt on their life. When that's your job, it takes a while to realize that the man in the corner isn't a lunatic, and the one you pass on the stairs isn't a psychopath. They're just like the man with the mop or the woman in the office. We don't choose our bodies and nor do we our minds. Paul taught me this. I was only a few weeks into my job when I met Paul. I was using my mop to push the bucket back to the storage room when I heard him.
"Hey, Mr. Cleaner Man."
I turned around to see a pudgy, bald, middle-aged man jogging towards me. He was slightly out of breath by the time he reached me, despite his many tattoos, faintly visible through his white t-shirt and winding around his arms. He gave off no air of intimidation.
"Mind if I walk with you a while, Mr. Cleaner Man?"
There was a childlike innocence in him when he spoke. He was a few inches smaller than me and had to look up slightly to make eye contact. I thought I should feel threatened, but he didn't seem to want to fight. Not with me or worse himself. He just stared through the suspense, waiting for my response. "Yeah, sure, I'm only going to the storage room." A brief look of excitement filled his face for a second, before suppressing it and setting off beside me. I was almost paranoid by how friendly he was. He wanted to know about my day and told me about his. He asked me what I liked to do outside of work, and I asked him what he liked about the clinic.
"Not all that much."
We laughed as we arrived at the storage room. He thanked me for letting him tag along as I threw the mop into the corner. We shook hands before parting ways.
"I'm Paul, by the way. You seem like a nice fella, Mr. Cleaner Man."
His words seemed completely transparent. There was no motive hiding behind him. Just a man, happy to be conversing. I found myself walking with Paul daily. We only saw each other during my minute-long journey to the storage room, but it never felt too short to have real conversation. I found out that Paul worked in a warehouse before having a mental breakdown in the midst of his divorce. The counselors told him he can't leave while harboring the risk of another suicide attempt. The worst part of the whole situation is how painfully aware Paul was of the wreck unfolding in his brain. I found a way of asking him how walking with the cleaner for barely 60 seconds affects the storm cloud above his mind. It saddened me to see his head droop as the usual, bubbling enthusiasm in his face grew still and cold.
"When I first met my wife, ex-wife, I was a cleaner. Things were still nice then. If I could just walk with you while you hold your mop, I could pretend they're still my hands keeping these floors clean. And at the end of the night, I could pretend that they're still my hands opening the doors to go back home to when things were still nice.
I felt my heart grow heavy as my brain rummaged, looking for words to say. No breakdown, mess, or human under that hospital roof could express the loneliness in what had just left Paul's mouth.
Paul, I...
The bubbling enthusiasm jumped back into his eyes.
Don't let me depress you, Mr. Cleaner Man. We don't talk long enough to spend our time sad.
He firmly patted my back while holding the sadness that shimmered under his joyful temporary facade. I liked Paul. I don't go out much, and I don't enjoy talking on the phone, but I never felt a conversation flow so freely than when I was with him. He was the weird kid at school you took under your wing to later realize their gold mine of a personality. After the first week, we could ask each other's family members by name. After the first month, we could mention important times in our lives by the date. After a year, I saw him as my work friend, the best one I'd met. He knew my name after the first day, but he still liked to call me Mr. Cleanerman. The only things I did in that hospital were exactly what I was told and talked to Paul. So when one of the counselors asked to see me, I had an idea of what it was about.
Just take a seat here for me.
Miss Loudon was a well-dressed woman in her mid-50s. She pulled up a chair for me and placed it by her desk. I felt I was receiving bad news at a doctor's appointment.
Now, I won't keep you too long. I just feel it's important to address your relationship with this facility.
She thought carefully and spoke slowly, almost as if she had no idea what words should come after the previous. I know what this is about, Miss Loudon. I understand the concern, but me and Paul just talk. Nothing funny. My response lingered in the air as she processed what I just said.
Paul, she continued, mentioning Paul's name like it was in a language she didn't speak. We feel it's a part of your life that won't benefit you. You understand?
My face must have told her that I really didn't. Paul will likely lead you to making bad decisions. He may be a nice addition to your time here at the moment. But in the long run, we dread to think of him bringing harm to you.
Wow. I was surprised and saddened by the fact even a counselor couldn't separate a troubled man from a dangerous one, but there we were.
I completely understand, miss. I'll be sure to keep this in mind from now on. Both were lies, but I had no interest in hearing what else she had to say. She didn't know Paul. I did. We'll be sure to check your progress now and then to be sure further assistance isn't required.
I left the room almost offended, knowing I'd speak to Paul the next day. Miss Loudon must have heard us talking from her office when we headed to the storage room before, so I made sure I took my time mopping the floor outside Paul's room instead.
What? Why would she think that? I've never hurt anyone in here. I hated seeing such offense take over Paul's face. Stay inside your room. I'll talk from out here.
I murmured as I continued mopping the floor to disguise our conversation.
They're total freaks, Paul. They enjoy telling us what to do. I know this job, but not for them to decide my friends. I continued.
Paul's face lit up in a small glow of pride at my use of the word friend. It was the first time I had called him one to his face. The glow suddenly dimmed into an emotion I had never seen within him before. Pure anger.
How can that bitch be so cruel? She deserves to be in here, not me.
I watched him pace his room with his arms folded tightly. I quietly matched his rage. I saw the exact second an idea locked itself into Paul's brain. He froze before throwing his stare in my direction, smirking in excitement.
I've got it. I've got it, Mr. Cleaner Man.
I would have matched his enthusiasm, too, if there wasn't a slight ting or fear intertwined with my anticipation. He turned to face me, taking a step closer.
Cut my wrists.
I prayed to find a sliver of humor in his eyes.
What?
How would that help anyone?
I noticed I had stopped mopping in my shock.
Nothing will happen if I complain about Miss Loudon in here. She'll only find out. If I show you how to cut my wrists and make it look bad, I'll be taken to A&E. They'll listen there.
His eyes told me that he genuinely believed what he was saying.
Paul, this is ridiculous. Why do you need me to do it?
Because I trust you, Mr. Cleaner Man, much more than myself.
I didn't discard his words to be those of madness, but rather desperation.
I'm not going to hurt you, Paul. I'm sorry. I'll come back and see you soon. Don't do anything stupid.
I pointed at him like a teacher scolding a child.
I stabbed the bucket with my mop and set off down the corridor.
I felt strange not having him beside me.
Think about it, Mr. Cleaner Man. We could take her down together.
The words echoed from his room as I stared ahead, begging that the double doors several yards in front of me would come sooner.
I'm almost ashamed to say I spent the next 5 weeks avoiding Paul. I'd tiptoe while passing his room, and I deliberately changed my cleaning routine to avoid an encounter. Miss Loudon called me into her office a few times during that period, but only for me to say things were going well, then be dismissed by her. I wasn't scared of Paul, just concerned about how our friendship affected him. It was just over 2 weeks when I found the courage to talk to him again. My plan was to clean outside his room early in the morning and wait for him to wake up. My plan didn't go well. I was hardly by his door when he opened a few inches and a hand shot out, grabbing me by the collar and dragging me inside. I regained my balance to see Paul stood there, excitement consuming his presence as he hid his hands behind his back.
"Hey, Paul, how you doing?"
I felt my vulnerability prepare me to run if needed.
"I have it, Mr. Cleaner Man. I have it, look."
Paul revealed a thin, sharp plastic object from behind his back. No bigger than 6 inches, with a light green and dark blue design swirling up it.
What have you done, Paul?
I felt my shoulders hunch and my head lower as I instinctively leaned back.
Not bad, is it? It was a toothbrush. I was up all night sharpening it against the walls. Remember the plan I had?
He spoke as if I wasn't completely against the idea just weeks ago. He held out the toothbrush with one hand for me to grab, followed by the other with his wrist exposed.
Do it, Mr. Cleaner Man. It's the right thing to do.
He began edging towards me.
Stop it, Paul. Just let me get back to work.
Closer. We'll look back in pride. You know you have to, Mr. Cleaner Man.
Closer.
He grabbed my hand and tried to wrap it around the toothbrush. I tugged him towards me and began wrestling him for the sharp object. I could hear where the squeaks of our shoes against the floor and the grunts as I tried to both gain control of the homemade knife and keep it away from both our torsos and throats. I forced Paul to the floor, only to have him push his feet against my stomach and kick me away. I fell back against the closed door as Paul used the walls to scramble to his feet, still armed with the weapon.
We were so close, Mr. Cleaner Man. Now you have to wait until next time. Goodbye, Paul.
He placed the sharp end of the toothbrush just below his left ear before forcing it into his flesh and slicing up his right.
Paul, stop!
Blood sprayed across the room, leaving splatters on my trousers and shoes. He fell backwards against the wall and slid back to the ground, his eyes open but body lifeless. I thought of all the times I had to clean up such a mess. I swung the door open and stumbled down the corridor, leaving bloody footprints from behind me. I bursted into Miss Loudon's office and was met by her startled, concerned gaze looking up from paperwork.
Paul cut his throat. He's lying in a cell. He's not moving.
I blurted as I felt my knees tremble and saw my world grow blurry with tears.
Calm down. Just calm down. Look at me.
Miss Loudon stood up and walked around her desk to stand in front of me.
It's my fault. Oh God, it's my fault.
I felt my stability sinking through my fingers.
You need to tell me what happened.
She tried to sit me down.
Paul's dead!
I screamed before falling into the chair and sobbing into my forearms upon my lap. It must have been a minute before I heard the words that would scramble my reality and tear apart any grasp I had left. Well done, Paul. I looked up to see Miss Loudon smirking. A mix of pride and satisfaction was chiseled in her face.
What?
I felt the shake in my voice. I've worked with a lot of patients, suffering from split personality disorder, Paul. Even some with schizophrenia, too. Very few have made a breakthrough quite as significant as this. She put her hand on my shoulder. You should be proud of yourself, Paul. The word no gently rolled out of my mouth. I looked down at my shoes and trousers to realize that Paul's blood was gone. I leaned out of the doorway and saw no red footprints leading to where I stood, just a cleaner, a stranger, mopping the floors.
What happened to me? Why are you calling me that?
I staggered backwards until I was against Miss Loudon's wall. You've made progress, Paul. This man, this other version of you, was a dangerous part of your life. All your troubles resided in him. Just because he wasn't real for everyone doesn't mean he wasn't real for you.
This couldn't have been real. It was too sick to be a joke, but too awful to be a nightmare.
I felt the past few years of my life spiral through my mind. I realized I couldn't remember the last time I was home. I walked back to Paul's room. Miss Loudon followed, trying to explain further. There was no one inside. All the furniture was the way it was left. The way it was left by me. I remember sitting on the bed I thought was Paul's, and life just kept moving. If you struggled together every word I said in the mouth that followed, you'd barely make a sentence out of it. I grimaced every time someone called me Paul for a while. It was a few weeks before I felt my name again. I slept very little in my room I didn't even know was mine. I spoke with Miss Loudon every day, and she explained that the man I saw was a hallucination, a personification of a small but negative part of my mind. Other sufferers see several of their negative emotions in the forms of people, and I was being evaluated further to be sure that Paul was alone. I came to learn that I hallucinated a lot of my time in the hospital. It would have been harmful to tell you. We could only help. Everything he did was a hallucination. Everything he did to you or you to him, you did to yourself. It was your back that you were patting and your hand you were shaking. She told me this, making me shiver at the echoing memory of Paul's last request. Cut my wrists. I didn't tell anyone about that. All I wanted to do was get out of the hospital, and I knew that would only cause further evaluation. It was just under 3 months when I deemed stable enough to leave, and in a bizarre way, I didn't want to go without my friend. I went back to the home I used to share with my ex-wife, and was reminded of the understanding Paul gave me. It was a bond I'd never feel with anyone else. Apparently, your mind is capable of tricking you into believing that you're in a much happier time while in complete turmoil. It tricked me into thinking things were still nice. I wondered if I ever would find myself slowly sinking into the darkness within my thoughts again. Would Paul come back? Would someone else appear? I still dream about walking up to him in those corridors every night and replay all our conversations from the first to the last. I wake up retelling jokes and repeating advice I gave him. I always listen for his response. That Paul is gone now. He's just a time in my life that I had to brush over when meeting new people and making new friends. Paul's gone, but something else isn't. When I sit up in my bed, quoting my old self, I normally turn over to face the night again. But sometimes I don't hear, but I feel a response. A little storm cloud growing above mind. A wreck unfolding. I recognized its words, but it's a different tone this time. It's getting louder, getting realer.
Hey, Mr. Cleaner Man.